Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Thursday night / Friday morning, we're going to talk a little bit of USC and Ohio State Cotton Bowl. It was kind of a crazy week with Christmas and everything, so I apologize. We didn't have any podcast yet here till the end of the week, but we wanted to talk with Dan Weber. And Dan and I are both in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're at different hotels right now, chatting over Skype. Wanted to answer your questions about this team and the game and talk to Dan, pick his brain about what's been going on this week at the practices and all the press conferences, and Dan's been to all those. So we're going to do all of that. Any questions or comments, podcast at uscfootball.com. That's our email, or you can call us at 424-254-9141. Call or send us a text. We love to hear from you. We love to respond, and we'll do our best to do all of that here on the podcast this evening. We did a couple podcasts late. We had a Trojan Blast recruiting podcast with Keeley and Gerard Martinez. Usually I do that. I apologize. I've had the flu and bronchitis, so I'm just recovering from all that, traveling and everything. Keeley did that, and then Keeley and Shotgun had their Family Feud podcast actually earlier on Thursday. So we're going to try to squeeze one more podcast in before the end of the week, and we welcome in Dan Weber, who's been here since before Christmas, covering the team. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Pretty good. Just we're at Omni Media Hotel, and it's also the hotel where both bands are staying. And in trying to circumvent the big lines at the elevator and the first floor and the second floor and the third floor, came up to the fourth floor, and as I was doing that, met a USC guy, said, "I listen to all the podcasts." I said, "Well, we're about to do one right now." So he said, "That's great." So anyway, I was trying to sneak up. I ended up on an elevator with like a dozen Ohio State band members. And they had done the Battle of the Bands this afternoon in a downtown park. Clyde Warren Park in downtown Dallas, built over the freeway. And it was good. It was fun.
Oh, very cool. We want to talk about all that, everything you've seen out here this week in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Wanted to jump in, just talk about our sponsor real quick, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us, and I got a little Trader Joe's story on my flight today. I was in line at security at Virgin America, and the woman in front of me had a backpack on with a Trader Joe's USC bag, you know, those reusable bags that are so popular, rolled up, and I asked her about it, and she said her mom got it. She went to USC, but she doesn't go there anymore. But so she has not been to the new Trader Joe's at University Village. She was asking me about that, so we had a good chat about that, but those Trader Joe's bags are still very popular. So I saw one, instantly knew right away, and it sparked a conversation in line for us to check our bags. So, but I want to say happy 50th anniversary to Trader Joe's. Thanks for being a great sponsor this football season. It's been awesome. Last game. You're going to watch the game at home. You're not making it down here to Dallas. Jump into Trader Joe's. Pick up some wine. Pick up some beer. Some cheese. Lots of different snacks. Get those peanut butter cups. Those are awesome. All kinds of cool stuff. You can go to Trader Joe's and watch USC's last game of 2017 in style with your own little Trader Joe's tailgate in your house. So check it out. And if you're here, there's a lot of tailgates. Dan and I were just talking about, there's a bunch of tailgates here. Hopefully you can pick up your stuff at Trader Joe's. I'm pretty sure there's Trader Joe's here in Dallas, Dan.
I think so. I think there is, yes.
Yeah, I would think so. So
I think
they're
in almost all the major metropolitan areas in the country. I looked that up one day just to see all the places where they are, and it doesn't look like they're missing any of them.
Well, I wanted to talk about kind of what you've been seeing here over the past. I just got here today, but you've been here, I believe you came in on Christmas Eve, right? Is that the
Christmas Day.
Yeah, it's Christmas. And I feel like...
I was here for the first practice. I got to see was Christmas... Christmas Day, I guess it was? No. I came in on Christmas Day. First practice was the day after Christmas because USC has had a little different practice schedule, say, than Ohio State. Ohio State's had one more open practice and one more practice, I guess, than USC since they got here. So we got basically just one USC practice at AT&T where they allow you just to be there for 15 minutes. It's basically for the photographers more than us. Although the one thing you could see, and I told people that you could tell that Port Augustine was not back, and he was still, you know, in shorts and not in pads and not doing any football stuff. And today, Clay did finally say, yeah, he's out. He's not going to play. The other thing you could see, Velus Jones' ankle looks pretty stiff. I would be shocked if he's able to play. Jack Jones, I think, is kind of flip a coin. I don't know. I don't know that they know, and maybe, you know, they'll know tomorrow at game time. But that was about all. The other thing you could see is they're really working to play fast. I think they have, that's kind of what they maybe, you know, where they might have an edge is just Ohio State doesn't see teams that play fast. I guess the last two that they saw that played fast were Clemson last year in the playoffs and Oklahoma this year. I think we know how both of those games went. And so... So I think you may see a concerted effort of USC, especially on offense, to go tempo because the big advantage Ohio State has on everybody is they're basically 10 deep up front, you know, with four NFL guys and just one player after another, and that they can, you know, they rotate so much. But if you're running tempo, they can't substitute. So that's going to be an interesting kind of piece of the, you know, the chess match that's going to happen and how soon USC does it. Do they start out that way? I think they want, the players want to. It'll be interesting to see. I think that's one of the interesting calls for people to look at for tomorrow night is, does USC start in tempo and how does Ohio State handle it?
Yeah, so many interesting storylines in this one, and it was cool that we got to kind of get your reports of what you've been seeing. The injury reports are always interesting, people asking about Port Augustine and all that, so I'm glad you addressed that. And the Cotton Bowl does a great job. I wasn't here, and I'm getting all these emails, transcripts of kind of what's been going on. It's a little more, I guess, homogenized, you know, than when we go to practice, like in Los Angeles, like kind of very specific things that you're kind of getting, but it seems like it was worth it to be out here and just kind of get a feel for what was been going on.
Well, I mean, you do get a sense of the access to the players. I thought it was worthwhile. You get five or six players from, you know, the defense one day and the offense another day. You really get a chance to see and get a sense of what do the Ohio State kids think about USC. And you know, you don't have to deal. You know, you can go on the boards or even read, you know, the newspapers and what have you, and you know, okay, they probably don't really get it. But what do the Ohio State kids think? What do the coaches think? And so you do get to talk to, you know, Greg Schiano, the defense coordinator, and just ask him, what do you see when you see USC, and what do you see when you see Sam Darnold and Ronald Jones? Like today, Urban Meyer couldn't. He was asked about Sam, and he went into a fairly long answer about Sam Darnold, and then he stopped himself almost in mid answer and said, "But that Ronald Jones, he might be just as good." And you know, say, you know, it was somebody that maybe we haven't all heard about as much. But then we said, when you watch him on film, he's really good. And he said, you know, he's as good as anybody we've played. And he said, and you got to consider, we've already played, you know, Saquon Barkley of Penn State. Said he's, you know, he's a top 10 player. And so you get, you know, little takes like that if you're out here talking to the coaches or, you know, and you get a sense of what they're going to try to do. And like T. Martin was talking about how he did film study for Ohio State and what films he looked at, or Sam would talk about that. So I asked Greg Schiano a question based on that, and he stopped me and said, what films did they look at? Well, they looked at all of them, but they may have looked at that Oklahoma film and the Penn State film from last year. And he said, yeah, I knew they would. He said, I bet they looked at the Iowa film too. I said, I think they did. So that was, you know, that's fun to kind of get that back and forth, because you don't often get that. The one thing that was missing this year, because this game is so early, it's the first of the January 6th bowl games and playing it on Friday, they had to cut out what I thought was the best part of last year's Rose Bowl, when both teams bring all their players and all their coaches for a you know, like an hour, where you get everybody on the team, and they, that day they didn't have have time for the way the schedule worked out, so we didn't get to do that. But otherwise, I think it's worth it to kind of get a sense of exactly who these guys are and what they're thinking and how they do they really. I mean, they're, you know, and you can go way back to Oklahoma in the famous Owens Bowl, when after talking to them, you realize they have no idea what's going to happen to them. You just knew that. I mean, it's just the coaches didn't know, the players didn't know, and they were, you know, had all the kind of wrong takes on USC football. Ohio State, you get the sense they know, they understand that what USC can do. Not always, you know, those of us who follow USC don't know always if they're going to do it, but what they can do. And I think they know USC is different from anybody that they play, and has a potential that that maybe people they don't, you know, that they play don't. But again, USC is so difficult to read. I mean, you know, will they show up? Won't they show up? Will they show up every play? Will they show up one quarter, not the next? Will they show up one half, not the next? Who really knows? I don't think we know.
That's, I mean, I think the way you put that is perfect. It's potential, and both of these teams have it. They have the potential to lay an egg, like USC went on the road to Notre Dame, and Ohio State went on the road to Iowa and do that. But they also usually have more 5-stars than anyone they play. There's that potential there. You know, if they put it together, they can do stuff that most of the teams they play can't do. So that's what makes this interesting to me, Dan, is these two teams have all that potential and have that potential to lay an egg also. And we've seen that happen a lot. They don't always play to their potential, but if they do, look out, because there's a lot of athletes and a lot of dudes that can do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, the Dobbins kid is really an impressive kid, yeah. A freshman. He's got a lot of that, you know, look of Saquon Barkley, and I doubt if he's any taller than I am. I mean, they list him at 5'10". I don't even know that he's that. I mean, really built. I mean, just strong as can be. You know, he's really a good one. And it's gonna be interesting to see. They've got a lot of talent, and they're veterans. They've got 9 senior captains. I think I talked to 7 of them, and these guys have been around 4 and 5 years.
9 captains? Jeez.
9, yeah. They got more captains than anybody. They got more captains than most 2 teams.
USC tried 6 once, but that didn't work out with the Josh Shaw thing,
9.
If you remember that.
So USC's going to be outnumbered at the coin flip. I don't think there's any question about it. Real mature kids. I don't know how that works out. Sometimes that's a real plus. Sometimes, you know, I talked to their middle linebacker who now they play on the outside. And he was talking, he said, somebody said, well, where do you go from here? And he says, well, I'm going where it's really warm, and I'm going where it's not, you know, and I kidded him. I said, well, it was 80 in Orange County when I left the other day. He says, I'm going out there. He said, to be honest, I'm going to Hollywood, and I'm going to hang out there for a while, and then I'm going to Arizona to train for the combine. I said, okay. But you could see there, you know, there's that sense of, you know, USC's in a different place from most of the other schools, and if they show up and play like USC, they'll be in good shape, because there is that kind of respect factor, even though I think one or two of them didn't realize the streak, and you know their fans don't. You just want to say to people, I'm not sure I'd be real cocky in a matchup with USC if I'm Ohio State if I realize that the last seven times these teams have played, going back to the 1973 season, you guys lost. That's seven straight. I mean, and the one kid said, what? Really? Is that true? I said, yeah. But then some of the others all said, no, like our alumni have been telling us about that, or, yeah, we've heard it. We know. But I don't know that their fans know it. Their fans totally do not think this is going to be a game. They just think basically USC's defense cannot stay on the field with the Ohio State offense. They look at the stats, they look at the numbers, and they just say, you know, they can't play us. And of course, the stats are skewed now. Greg Schiano said, hey, those stats are skewed. I mean, he said, we play in a conservative conference. He didn't mention this, but five of the teams that they played were below number 100 on offense. I mean, they basically have played two dynamic quarterbacks in the last couple of years, Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield. And again, didn't turn out so well for them, because they don't see those kinds of players. So Sam comes in and plays like that, and Shauna said, hey, he is, you know, it's just like Baker Mayfield, but in a bigger body. Sam comes out and plays like that. I think they know, you know, life could, you know, they've got to get to him. I mean, that's what they pride themselves on. And very much like Penn State last year, that was their game plan, get to Sam. And they tried everything, and they couldn't get to Sam. And they were unbelievably frustrated. It'll be really interesting if Ohio State tries everything they got and they don't quite get to him. As Urban Meyer said today, he said, if that happens, if we don't get to him, and he does throw the ball with time, with their receivers, we will not be able to stop him. So here they come, Sam. They're coming.
So some interesting stuff from this week of preparation. Today, I guess, was the last sort of event. I think you went to get to go check it out. I just had landed, and I think this was going on. The Battle of the Bands. Right. How was that? Was that interesting?
Well, you know, I wish the park, they took the main freeway north-south through town, the 35, and I guess it is the freeway that JFK was heading to, Stemmons Freeway, and they put a park over it. So you're limited in the size by the amount of space they have over the freeway through downtown. So whereas a couple of years ago when they did this in San Diego, they had the two bands facing one another, and they didn't have anybody in between. Well, here they had the USC band on one side, the Ohio State band on the other, and they had fans everywhere in between. And one of the Ohio State kids said, you know, I couldn't hear the USC band. And that was the same way. If you were down at the USC end, you couldn't hear the Ohio State band or see them. So, like, if you're watching them do USC band do Tusk and you don't get to see the Song Girls as part of that, you really miss the whole flavor of it. So it wasn't thought out probably as well as it should have been, but they were limited geographically by it. But the USC band finished with, you know, they would each do I guess they did about 9-10 tunes apiece. But USC finished with Tusk, and it's hard to top Tusk.
It was funny. I saw a tweet from our buddy Ray, USC Psycho. He got so you always see him. He's the guy with the license plate that says USC Psycho. He's always right. in the front row and stuff. And then you always see that Buckeye guy, the Bucknut guy, who's like a crazy guy. So they had a picture together, the two of them. So
I missed that. I haven't seen that yet. Oh,
that's pretty good. So two super fans.
It was so crowded, you couldn't see things like that down in front if you unless you got there an hour and a half early. And unfortunately, I was chauffeuring a couple of our LA media types who never seemed to get there on time. So we were life or death. We got there by the start, but we were life or death because again. It's right in the middle of downtown, and the parking spaces were, like the USC band, we're talking six or seven or eight buses. I mean, it's a whole block of just USC band, and they have all the, the lunches and, drinks and food and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's real. You realize, or if you get in a hotel with them, man, when you take that many guys, it's pretty amazing. You got to give them credit because they do have, as good as the Ohio State band is, they can't come close to matching the USC band in terms of that streak that goes back to 1970, whatever, of never having missed a road game or, home or road game, obviously, home game, but made every trip. The other thing today, although he looked a little bit chilly, his Traveler was here and with the band, and Traveler looked like he was moving around to try to stay warm because I think it was about 42, and that's a little chill for all of us Southern Californians now.
Yeah, I would say that's a little bit chilly for what we expect. So, but it wasn't too bad when I got here. Okay, we've got some questions before we jump into all that. I wanted to thank our sponsor, SeatGeek. If you want to buy tickets to a sporting event, it can be complicated. It can be confusing. There's a better way to buy using SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets for every type of live event. Of course, we're talking about the Cotton Bowl coming up on Friday. If you're searching for a last-minute deal, you want a night out with your family, your friends, you want to find a perfect gift, SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing quite like seeing the Trojans in person. SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I'm looking on their app right now, so download the app. It's a great way to check out where the tickets are, what you're looking for. They're starting at $73 for the Cotton Bowl Classic. That's 7:30 p.m. local time on Friday, December 29th. Just a few taps, you can instantly find your seats. You can do great holiday shopping on SeatGeek. You need a late gift for somebody, you can do that too. It'll save you money, save you time. It'll search by searching multiple ticket sites, comparing all the prices, and finding amazing deals, and you'll get the most bang for your buck because they grade every ticket based on value. So you know what the value of the ticket that you're getting, and like I said before, it's fully guaranteed. So you can buy on SeatGeek with confidence. Make it your go-to app to find the best types of deals on every ticket, sporting events, concerts, comedy, theater. So best of all, for all of you here on the Peristyle Podcast, our listeners, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code USC. That's promo code USC for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So check it out. You can still get down here. You want to come down here? Saw a lot of USC fans. What's it been like, Dan, out there? Has it been a good mix of USC and Ohio State fans? Or is there a lot of one or the other?
Until today, mostly Ohio State fans.
Okay.
A good mix today. Ohio State got here first. I think a lot of them drove. You see more students. I think more Ohio State students would be here, I would guess. But USC started coming in today, and an awful lot of those people did go to the Battle of the Bands. So not a lot to do when it's kind of this cold and it's really gray and cold, and so people were looking for something to do, and I think today the Battle of the Bands was it. But Ohio State still had more people there. But otherwise, I think they're just hunkering down because I think it's gonna by the end of the week it might be right by Sunday I think it's gonna be snowing or what do they call it? Wintry mix.
Wintry mix.
So we'll be getting out of here just in time.
Yes, I'll be heading off to San Antonio to cover the Army All-American Bowl.
Oh,
so
that's right.
Yeah, so I've been, I flew in, so people don't know, I had the flu, I had bronchitis, so I was like out of it. I'm still kind of recovering. I was back east in Washington, D.C. visiting family, so last night I flew in. I think I got to Los Angeles a little after 11, and then turned around and left my house about 6 a.m., to get to the airport to fly to Dallas. So it's been I got like 6 hours at home. But hopefully, you know, we're doing this podcast. I'm trying not to do too much. Hopefully be all rested up for the game. So, hopefully we'll be, well, we got a bunch of questions, Dan. So let's try to get to those too. Tark says, do you think the outcome of this game will have much of an effect on Sam Darnold's decision to stay or go?
That's a good question. I think you could look at it, you know, both ways. I do think how they might do next year and how much fun that might be for Sam might, you know, come out of this game. And I think he can make the case that if he stays, maybe they, you know, they could go into next year thinking, okay, we didn't get it done last year when everybody thought we were, you know, a playoff team and all that. But we could do it this next year, which I think they clearly could if Sam stays. So is that a factor? I don't know. He hasn't. I don't think he's really thought about it a lot. I don't think his family has thought about it a lot. I don't think they've been, you know, getting advice from agents and all that kind of thing, which obviously isn't really often advice. It's just you know, how do I sign this kid up?
Yes.
So they stayed away from that, and Sam did talk about he's got 7 classes to get his degree, so that would be make it really doable, you know, between summer and next year. I thought it was interesting. 11 of the 22 Ohio State players have their degrees. Their best player, I think, is their best player, is Billy Price, their center. I mean, if you were going to create a guy and say, this is what I want a center to look like, it'd be this guy. He's 6'4", 312, smart kid. He's got his master's already.
Wow.
So, I mean, they've figured out a way to keep those kids in school. And it would be nice if that could happen a year or so at USC, like next year. Because I think they'd have a big edge on where the year goes. So will that be enough of a factor? I mean, I don't know what matters to Sam. I know I did tell him one day. I said, "Here's a little stat for you: of the last 13 Super Bowls, all the starting quarterbacks for the last 13 years of Super Bowl had 3 full years of college experience as a starter. So they started 3 years." And Sam started too. He said, wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting. So I don't know. Is it something like that? You know, do you say, you know what, I need another year of making, you know, high-speed, under-pressure decisions as a quarterback, and then I'm ready to go? I know he certainly is about challenges and about competing, and that's what the NFL will be. But where does he look, you know, as that next competitive step to take? Is it, you know, to take the step to get USC back to that place where everybody hopes that, you know, the Trojans get someday? Or is it to take the step into the NFL? He said, for example, he's not thinking like some people do, you know, if it looks like Cleveland's going to draft me, I'm not going. I don't think that's even a factor in his mind. He just doesn't care about stuff like that. He's just going to be thrilled whoever drafts him, and he'll move on. You know, it's there. And Sam said yesterday, he said, you know, I just haven't thought about it enough to give you a good answer. But after, you know, we get past the Cotton Bowl and that, I'll be able to give you a better answer as to how I'm approaching it, how I'm thinking about it. So I think it'll factor in, but I don't know how he's going to weigh every part of his decision.
Yeah, we'll see. This is, I think it's important. I think it'll certainly weigh in. And the way this goes, it could change the mindset. Maybe not change the overall decision, but certainly change some of the thought process going in. We got a question from the Johnson family. I guess it's the whole family. Thank you, Johnson family, for listening. He said, how is it decided on players who travel for road games? I ask because Vianney Talamvivao was on the sidelines at Notre Dame, yet Jamel Cook did not go. What reason would USC have for bringing an injured player and leaving a healthy one behind? Thanks as always, Randall in Dallas. Oh, I'm sorry. So this is Randall in Dallas by way of New Orleans. And I guess he's part of the Johnson family. We also had a question from Paul in Vegas asking about Jamel Cook, what his prognostication for him going forward. So maybe kind of talk about all of that.
Well, I think one of the decisions that's factored in with Jamel has been classwork and all of the academic part of things. And I think there might have been times when Jamel wasn't part of trips or practices or anything because of a commitment to academics. And so he missed some games and missed dressing. And then the last week that we saw him at USC, he was out there, after exams and all that, and running around and looking like the player he can be. So hopefully they've gotten past the whole, Jamel and academics and what does he want to do and all of that. As far as travel, there are two different situations. In the Pac-12, you've got a Pac-12 number for road trips, which, because it seems to change over the year, it's just that there's a number, and I don't know what that number is exactly right now. It was probably too low for a while and unfair to the traveling team, but they didn't want to allow some teams to travel the whole squad. But when you're out of the Pac-12, you can take you can take everybody, like to Notre Dame if you want. So you can definitely take, the injured guys and all that. It's just however you want to do that. But I do think, a guy like Vianney, if they got room, you shouldn't knock out a player who might play or might be needed or whatever. But I think that's a good idea. But I don't think they make the decision on the same level. There was one decision made for Jamel, independent of the decision made for Vianney. So I don't think in those cases they go, those decisions don't depend on one another.
Yeah, and then, what do you think about Cook kind of going forward?
Well, I mean, you just hope. Thought he looked real good. Few days we saw him in practice. He's got a lot of ability. He's got a lot of talent. He can do some things. The disappointment was that when he kind of got lost a little bit this year, is they didn't have him on the on special teams, and that's where I think he could have really gotten a lot done this year and didn't, for reasons that he was just kind of hadn't made up his mind exactly what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do it and if he wanted to be, fully committed and all that. And if he is, we can look for him tomorrow, on special teams. There are just so many ways he can help his team, but you hesitate to make any predictions based on, this season where he's kind of been lost a little bit. The nice thing about him is you could kind of pencil him at any of the three spots on in the secondary, and he can play there. I think it hurt him a little bit that he had that versatility and maybe didn't have one absolute spot to learn and to fill in, and you could see why you'd be tempted to do that because of his his skill set and his his physicality, his athleticism. But I think, he can be as good as he wants to be, and he can be, as important a factor for this USC program as he decides he's going to be. You know, it's completely up to him to make that decision.
We had one from Ted in Manhattan Beach, my neighbor Ted. I'm in Hermosa. It is my understanding that red-shirted players are able to play in a bowl game without losing their eligibility. What does that mean for Marlon Tuipulotu? Could he play in the bowl game since he's a medical redshirt? Thanks, Ted in Manhattan Beach.
No, I don't think the medical redshirts can play. I don't know. I guess that rule did pass now that you say that.
I don't remember that, yeah. I'd have to look at that.
I don't think anybody's even talked about it. I know it was suggested as a really good idea. And I think now that you say that, they may have actually passed that rule, which is, it just seems kind of crazy. I don't think that would apply to a medical redshirt. And Marlon's not ready to play at all. I mean, he hasn't put on a pad or a helmet or anything. I mean, we've seen him out of practice a couple of times. But that, you know, that could be an interesting factor, you know, down the road when you get a kid who you've decided to redshirt. And then I don't think if the redshirt is a medical redshirt, you're going to be allowed to do that. But I think if he's a regular redshirt, I think that was the idea, is, you could still play him in bowl games. And I think one of the thoughts there was if kids decide to skip the bowl game, you know, you'd have somebody to put into that position. But I'm going to check to make sure on that whole rule and whether that's gone into effect. I would say for USC, I wouldn't think there's anybody that's been redshirted that would be, able to step into a spot in the Cotton Bowl. I wouldn't look for that to happen.
That, I know it was something that was proposed. I don't remember if it actually passed or whatever, but that was a proposal.
And even if it was proposed and passed, that doesn't necessarily mean for this year either. I mean, and there has been no conversation about
it. Yeah, I haven't heard anyone talk about that.
So I would think even if it passed, it wasn't for this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally not a subject that I've seen, you know, one word written about. You would think somewhere in the country, somebody would have taken advantage of that, and haven't heard that.
We had Jeff in Sylmar. He said, "What is the status of Oluwole Batiku? Any chance he will get playing time next season?"
Oh, next season, because tomorrow I think is. His injury situation, I guess we should have mentioned him. He may be the other one, and he's still been rehabbing, so I'm not completely sure. He you know, that lack of having played football as a, you know, as a kid and really playing catch up all this, you know, this time, I think there's a point where it kicks in and where you figure it out, where you figure out the angles and the body, you know, control and what to do with your hands and what kind of things you've got to, you know, adjust for, you know, what deceptions and things like that. And he hasn't gotten there yet. But when he does get there, if he does, he will be a load. But again, that's, it's not something I don't think we can put any kind of timetable on. I don't know. I mean, just because, for example, you're quick and strong and fast and all those things, that doesn't always mean, say you're playing defense, that you can disengage from people. And you can be all of those things, but if you don't have the finesse or the, you know, the body, you know, control, the body lean, all of that kind of thing, you can still get tied up with people and can't make plays. So I don't know that we've seen that he can do that, and I don't know that he's, you know, seen for himself that he can do it. But we need to see that, him as a playmaker. And football still seems like a little bit of a foreign, entity, to Alawali, which it is. I mean, it is. It's and to be expected to play at this level is kind of expecting a lot. So I think between this year and next year is the big, you know, time frame for him to be able to set, you know, step in and say, you know, I've got this much athleticism, this much strength, this much quickness. I ought to be able to be a factor when I'm out on the field and really feel like I know the game and can contribute. And we just don't have that sense yet.
Yeah, we do not. We were talking about the you know, players being eligible for the bowl game, redshirting, stuff like that. Don sent this in just before UCLA's bowl game. And if you didn't know, Josh Rosen practiced, warmed up, but did not end up playing. And they were saying it's concussion protocol. But, of course, there's speculation that he just didn't want to play in the bowl game. But Don's question...
Let me interrupt.
Oh, sure.
I can't imagine if you're in concussion protocol, you shouldn't be warming up. If you're warming up, you shouldn't be in concussion protocol.
Yeah, that was weird.
Unless you run into a wall between the warm-ups and the start of the game. So I really had trouble believing that story. That story just didn't sound, didn't have the ring of truth to it. I mean, you know, if you're in concussion protocol, you don't put the uniform on. You certainly don't put a helmet on, even to warm up.
Yeah, and so, it was just like they were trying to make it look like he was, you know, they didn't want to make him look soft by not playing. I don't know. I'm not sure what it was, but.
Yeah, but there are a lot of those stories that you really don't know what is the story. I don't think we have a clue.
Well, Don wrote in, he said, if Rosen sits out their bowl game but comes back next year, I don't think that's going to happen, Don, I think this will set a back precedent. What's next? Will he sit out of a game next year because the opponent has a ferocious front seven and could risk injury? It will be more difficult next year for Rosen to be a leader if he sits out and comes back next year. Available scholarships? So that was one part of it. I don't think he's coming back, Don. But he said, available scholarships. I'm a little confused about how scholarships USC has, how many they have available next year. It seems like Helton should have given the kicker and punter blue shirts if that was possible. Next year, there will be more seniors, likewise more scholarships available. Helton must know that a few players will transfer this year. What have you heard? That's all from Don.
I think they're stuck a little bit. I don't think they know how many are leaving. I think that may play into the way they recruited.
Yeah,
and they, you know, Clay talked today about we got a lot of, you know, we got a number of slots. We think we did great. Whereas Urban Meyer said he hated it, he didn't like anything about it, and they finished number one in the nation, and they got all but two scholarships given out. You know, they said they had to work hard, you had to get on a plane every day after practice and all that. But then, you know, Clay said it was great, couldn't have been better. We got players we really wanted and needed, and we still have plenty of room to recruit between now and, you know, February. And again, it will significantly matter to USC how many guys leave.
Yes.
And they'll know January 15th. They'll know that. And my guess is they've got guys who they're telling, you know, if we've got a scholarship, you got it. And so they're having to slow walk this thing. Whereas I think with Ohio State, the guys that are leaving are basically all their seniors. So I don't think they have the same, you know, sense of, oh man, we better hold some of these back, or we just don't, you know, we don't want to recruit 18 guys and then no scholarships are left for the kids that are not going to decide until February. So I think USC was in a little bit of a tough spot as far as the early signing period. You know, it just put them in a position where they're having to, you know, crystal ball it as far as who's leaving and who's not, because I don't think all those decisions have been made yet. I think they know some of them, but so
yeah. I think USC
talk numbers right now. I don't think they know numbers at all.
And I think USC was in the spot where no one really knew exactly what to expect, and USC was just kind of hoping it was February will still be the most important date, but then after you look at it, like, nope, 80% of the 300, you know, top 300 players or whatever all signed, you know, so the big schools signed just about everyone they could. So I think USC was hoping that wasn't going to be the case, and it was, and then you're like, all right, now I got to, like, change the way we're doing things.
Well, and it may work out. I mean, stuff happens that just seems to protect USC when it comes to recruiting. And they may get every one of those undecided kids that they really, you know, that are undecided, and maybe they don't go to the other school that signed a bunch of guys because they look at USC and say, hey, that's a better place for me. So maybe it'll work. And yet my guess is they aren't going to do it this way next year.
Yeah, I think they'll change next year. Well, part of the reason...
That's not saying it might not work this year.
Yeah.
For example, the whole JT Daniels thing, they clearly knew what was going to happen there, and they've known it for months, and they weren't allowed to say anything. I mean, they were, you know, the Daniels didn't want them to say anything. Nobody wanted them, you know, that out. So the USC coaches just didn't say anything. That changes how you look at this recruiting class, let's say, if you know that's going to happen. Okay, so they've got that, you know, in the bag and just couldn't say it. So, but are there any others kind of, not reclassifying kids, but other kinds of recruits where they know what's going to happen, they're just not saying? I don't know. I don't know why that would happen to USC more than, you know, Ohio State and Alabama and, you know, Georgia and all that. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because clearly it didn't play out the way Urban Meyer thought it was going to play out either. So I don't think anybody knew for sure. I mean, same with Nick Saban. He didn't like it, didn't want to do it, didn't want any part of it, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, we shall see.
I think USC was a little unlucky, just the way that they didn't have a lot of scholarships to kind of give out. So it would have been better to maybe start this next year, and maybe they would have been a little bit more aggressive. They did look like they kind of got caught with their pants down, not really realizing what was going on. But part of the reason,
and
too,
I also think maybe they don't quite have that, you know, infrastructure, that support staff.
Yes.
And maybe they don't have all the, you know, the coaches that go out and recruit. I mean, Urban Meyer talked about some days they only had five or six coaches for practice. You just didn't get the sense that USC had that many coaches on the road.
Yeah. And that's a good...
My guess would be Ohio State has more coaches on the road than USC does. And that's probably not a good thing.
And this is a good segue to our question from Ted. He addressed a couple different things. One of them being the, you know, could some guys transfer? And he mentioned, like, Jordan Austin, Jalen Jones. Maybe he means Jalen, I don't know, Grant Moore, Deontay Nunnery, Jacob Daniels, maybe some others. So he's talking about maybe guys transfer, but he's also talking about USC being woefully short in the recruiting department as far as support staff goes. And do you think Lynn Swann's going to allocate more of a budget to grow this unit? Because if you're going to talk about recruiting during bowl prep, you need that support staff to be a lot bigger, I think, than what it is, because they have to be on top of things. You can't wait and have all the official visits after the season if people are signing right after the season, you know. So maybe address those two things.
Yeah, no, I think it absolutely makes the case that you need a bigger staff. I don't think USC addressed that. I don't know where that, you know, falls in, but I thought you had to be more aggressive and realize that, man, you're going to have coaches that are, you know, coming and going and during bowl practice. It just, you know, it was a badly thought out idea by the NCAA. I mean, it was not well thought out. There's not a coach who agrees that it was well thought out. It really asked coaches to do two things at once, to be in two places at once. And the only way you can make up for that is with your support staff. And I don't know that USC did that. And I think that's a miss. And I'm thinking USC's assistant coaches, and I know people have gotten away somewhat from because of the increased support staff of assistant coaches having to go on the road. But I don't think there was any other way you could do it this year other than having all your coaches on the road. And I'm not sure that that has been the recent history of the entire USC coaching staff as to, you know, be aggressively on the road. And there are some people that don't seem to do that much. And I'm not sure you can get away with that now. And it's harder at USC, no question. If you want to, I mean, you look at Ohio State's roster, and one captain I talked to, he's graduating, was from Norfolk, Virginia. Another one was from Tarboro, North Carolina. And, you know, just different places that aren't exactly, you know, in Wichita Falls, Texas. And, you know, and you think, no, they really, and they've become a real master program, as we've seen. They've come into, you know, Southern California, come into Las Vegas. And so USC, and Clay said today, basically, 22 of our 25 most years, 20 to 22 at least, are going to be from the West Coast and from the Pac-12 footprint. And he had an interesting number. He said there were 125, basically, on average, there are 125 Power 5 signees a year from Southern California. Well, that's astonishing. That's an unbelievable number. And as Clay makes the point that if you don't sign those kids, you're going to be playing against them. They're either on your team or they're going to come after you. So I think in some ways USC has to really dominate and on the West Coast. And the Pac-12 footprint, USC has to be able to get everybody they want. And I think I'm convinced that you can compete for a national championship. However, you still have to get Leonard Williams out of Florida, Nelson Aguilar out of Florida, Ronald Jones out of McKinney, Texas. You got to find those guys that, like Ronald Jones, always wanted to come to USC. And that takes a lot of work. You know, like Ed Orgeron, for example, when he got Leonard Williams and what he had to do, and with, you know, that family's circumstances and all of that, and the way he convinced, you know, Leonard that this is the place for you and I'm, you know, the guy to coach you. I think that has to happen, and you need to see that from USC, the ability to do that. And I'm not sure there's quite that ability right now. I mean, I think they did a wonderful job the last couple of years on the West Coast. But I think when you see an Ohio State and what a national recruiting program looks like, you need to be able to pick up those three or four kids. And the criteria are, and both coaches said this, kid has to be a potential first-round draft pick, and there has to be some connection, some reason why that kid would make that, you know, several thousand-mile journey to go to college there. And to find those things out, that takes a lot of work, to find that kid that really wants to come to USC, you know, that Ronald Jones. I mean, what if they wouldn't have, you know, realized, because he had committed originally to Oklahoma State, and what if they wouldn't have realized and made that connection to, you know, to Ronald? I mean, you don't replace a kid like that if you miss him. So I think USC has to figure this out so that, you know, they just don't miss anybody.
We got one last one for you, Dan, before we let you go. This is a voicemail question about the number 55 at USC.
Hi, Ryan. This is John from Santa Barbara. I was wondering, in your next podcast, when you have Dan on, if you could discuss who the past players have been for USC that have worn number 55. We were discussing that the other day, and there are a number of us that are interested. I know there's been some great players that have worn that. And I know it's not being worn now, and I was just wondering what the background and details are. Thank you.
Thanks for that question, John. And I apologize. We actually have to go back and re-record this section. Was talking to Dan Weber on the show. When I played the voicemail, something happened, and it made our voices all out of sync. So you're not going to be able to hear what Dan's response was. And I do apologize for that. Dan was He's not a big numbers guy, I guess you could say. He doesn't like putting that kind of pressure on recruits. And, you know, even when a guy like Keith Rivers wore the number 55 for USC, was he ever going to live up to be a junior Seau? He told a really interesting story about the New York Yankees back in the like the Babe Ruth days, where they didn't even have numbers at the time, and they were just giving him whatever the number. You bat fourth, Babe Ruth. Okay, you're gonna wear number four. Lou Gehrig, I think he was second. You know, number two. So Dan was kind of telling some interesting stories about that. So he's not a real big numbers guy, but obviously, John, that's a a traditional number for USC. Some of the players recently have talked about not wanting to see it go to recruits, have it be earned. So we'll see kind of what they do with that. There's some really good linebackers coming in this class. But, you know, guys like Willie McGinnis and Keith Rivers wore the number. Obviously, you know, Junior Seau. So, I mean, a lot of traditional USC powers. I think Marcus Steele wore it. He wasn't all that great. But yeah, very, very important number. I think what Lamar Dawson was the last guy to wear at USC. So, I mean, he was like the highest rated player in the entire state of Kentucky the year he came out, and, never really had like an amazing career at USC. So I kind of agree with Dan on this, as far as those numbers and stuff go, but I apologize that we didn't get to hear his response to that. But you can go on the message boards and talk about it. But he just, in general, he's not a very big numbers guy. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up. Again, sorry we lost the last portion of this podcast. There was some syncing issue after I started to play the voicemail. We're not, excuse me, and I'm sick. We're not in our usual studio. We're doing this in a hotel room. So that was caused some kind of little snafu for that. But we do appreciate you listening to the Peristyle Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.